Well, sounds great so far.
Oh, well, there
See?
We go.
Everything
sounds
is
great.
Working.
Sounds great so far. We're just starting. It sounds great.
Hello, everyone. It is Molly Wood. Welcome back to Make Me Smart Daily Edition, where Kai Rizdahl and I try to make today make sense.
So, let's see. Hello, I'm Kai. For those of you who are new to this podcast, and, you know, even if you've been here for a while, let's just do a reminder. And also, if you've been here for a while, you know, tell a friend. Today is Wednesday. It's What Do You Want to Know Wednesday, our chance every week to answer some listener questions of the many that we get and, you know, sort of improve general overall knowledge about some random stuff out there because there's just lots of random stuff, you know?
Yep. And if you are just joining us, great. Welcome. That is awesome. Let's start off with our first question. We're very excited because we got a voice memo, our favorite thing that is to time. So Dana is our like award winner today. And that award is you get to go first.
Hi, Kai and Molly. This is Dana from North Carolina. My question is, what is still going on with some appliance supply chains, especially freezers? Along with everyone else in America, it seems, I purchased a stand-up freezer in April. It was scheduled for delivery at the end of August, but has since been delayed again until mid-October. I know that manufacturing and shipping have been strange in COVID times, but it seems like other items have normalized or their lead times are at least more reasonable. Why haven't freezers? Thanks for making me smart.
There is still not a lot of toilet paper in my local Piggly Wiggly. I'm just saying.
Really?
So not everything is normalized. Yeah. It's wild. I take a swing by every time I go. But well, so
and
look,
paper towels.
You and paper towels too. Yeah. And cleaning supplies. But, so a couple of things. Number one, Dana, you and everybody else wants a new freezer, right? And so demand has gone up and our factories, they can't have everybody inside making freezers and refrigerators and dishwashers and all that stuff because of the virus. So they have to cut capacity. And that is a lot of what's going on. As we know, this caught everybody off guard in terms of, you know, being able to get what we need when we need it. And we can't now.
Right. And it does. I mean, it definitely has hit appliances particularly hard because I think a lot of people were buying like those second freezers to stock up on meat because we thought there were going to be meat shortages. Hello. I bought a tiny one that's more dorm size, but yes. But apparently also because those factories are closed, it's like they're very specific. And it's related to, thank you to our producers who put in a link to summitappliance.com, which has updates on freezer inventory. And apparently part of the reason, like this is why I love this show, is as a result of an industry-wide ongoing conversion to hydrocarbon refrigerants to comply with many states' new environmental regulations. And that has made the factory part of it a little more complicated. The COVID-19 situation, quote, increased demand at a time of apparently already reduced supply because they were already closed to redesign and retool all the freezers. Ta-da! Smarter.
You know, if you think about, I mean, so there's a lot going on in this economy right now, obviously, but one of the common threads the last like 2.5-3 years has been supply chains because we had the trade war and the tariffs and what that did to supply chains for a bunch of stuff, not just appliances, and now the pandemic and how that's altered supply chains. It's actually kind of fascinating in a nerdy kind of way stuff.
It really is. I actually think we could probably do a near endless stream of stories on the idea of on reshoring. I'm like obsessed with idea of reshoring, like just bringing back all kinds of manufacturing. But it was a double whammy. It's like COVID reduced factory capacity and apparently this retooling, the environmental regulations also did, which frankly, I just hope don't get rolled back now that we've drawn attention to them.
Well,
see our previous episode.
I imagine. That's right.
On that topic.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We're going to Chris Lynch from Portland. I don't know which one. Apologies. Is it possible, he says, for any statewide or national candidate to get elected without having a Facebook presence? If not, is there any historical comparison for a single company having such a role in our political life?
Yeah. I'm going to go nope and nope.
Yeah.
No, it is probably not possible for any statewide or national candidate to get elected without a Facebook presence. And I can't imagine, I don't know of a historical comparison for a single company. Like certainly you could say candidates previously couldn't get elected without TV.
Yeah.
But now, like a lot of lawn mowing happens in your neighborhood.
I know. I'm really sorry. I apologize.
No, I'm fascinated by how often they mow.
Yeah.
They're really committed. I want some pictures. Can you send some pictures of that lawn? Because I bet it looks good.
Well,
It's a good looking line.
So it's a new construction, and they're trying to get ready to sell, and they're just over there grooming and tending and doing all that stuff all the time.
Oh, fascinating.
Yeah.
You're going to get new neighbors.
Yeah. I know.
Anyway.
Wait, so I have a question. I have a question about the whole Facebook thing. How important is it to Facebook and social media in general's dominance in the political advertising space that fundamentally it's so cheap, right? You can reach a gazillion people for like 12 cents.
Yeah. I mean, in theory, this was supposed to have been a good thing. And in some ways, it still is because Facebook, because social media advertising is a democratizer. It does, it takes power away from the incumbents because it is cheap and you can reach a lot of people, particularly if you're a local candidate. You know, if you're statewide or citywide or dog catcher, like you all of a sudden have a way that is financially accessible to reach constituents that didn't exist before. But in terms of like too big to go away, absolutely. Yeah. It absolutely is. And that's unless Facebook decides we don't want to make money this way. And I don't think that's going to happen because apparently since May of 2018, there's been over $1.7 billion spent on political ads in Facebook in the U.S.
What do you make? Sorry, this is a little off topic. What do you make of Mark Zuckerberg and his wife, Priscilla Chan, giving that $300 million to ensure voting integrity in this election?
This is a little bit of a preview to a show that's going to air tomorrow on Marketplace Tech, actually, because we did an interview about this today.
Tease. Yeah.
Yes, we'll call it a tease. One of the things that I said in the show and that is clear is that, like, Facebook and with even that donation, Mark Zuckerberg, they're trying to have it both ways. And so is Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't on the one hand say, we are totally responsible in the best possible way for the Arab Spring, for pro-democracy movements, for birthing the Black Lives Matter movement, but then also try to say we're not responsible for QAnon. You can't build an entire business, as Facebook did, on literally approaching campaigns and saying, if you spend this $1.7 billion since 2018 alone, you will win elections, but then also say we're not responsible for presidential speech or for political speech. And you can't pretend it's not your business model and that your business model doesn't take algorithms that then push content in front of people, that nothing about this is passive. So, like, don't give your $300 million. Fix your algorithm. Like, no. It's like
there
trying to. Yeah. I'm going to stop there. Just no. That's what
I was looking for. Fair enough. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Thank you. Good.
All right. Now we have one from Greg Wind in Rhode Island who asks, there's something very poetic about Greg Wind in Rhode Island, who says, ignoring unemployment when setting monetary policy seems good for workers, but I don't understand how more income in people's hands won't drive up prices in a policy vacuum. Have we been wrong to assume an income and inflation correlation this whole time? Take it away, Kai.
Wow. Wow. There's a lot in that question. Number one, the Fed's not ignoring unemployment when setting monetary policy, right? They have a dual mandate, maximum employment, stable prices. And the thing that was in the news the other day was Jay Powell concluding a 1-year, 18-month long review of monetary policy, that is interest rates. And Powell said, look, we're going to let inflation run for a little while. We're not going to worry about it so much, right? That's another word for stable prices. So they are paying attention to unemployment a lot. And then to the second part of the question, have we been wrong to assume an income and inflation correlation this whole time? Yes, we have. And it's not just us, Greg. It's everybody. It's a thing called the Phillips curve, right? What you're talking about is this thing that used to be in effect in this economy, right? It used to be just a kind of a law that when unemployment went down, that is to say more people had jobs and they had more income, inflation would go up. And about a year ago, Jay Powell said in a press conference, yeah, the Phillips curve doesn't work anymore, and we don't quite know why. Janet Yellen said to me on a panel 18 months ago, I asked her about inflation and why the Fed can't figure it out. And she said, yeah, I don't know. It's really confusing. We don't know why there isn't more inflation in this economy. And that is why Powell has said, you know what? We're just going to let it go for a while. And that's really a good thing because it will let jobs come back faster. It will let the recovery reach deeper into the economy, that is to say low-income people, because they are typically the last ones to feel the benefits. So they're not ignoring unemployment. They're letting inflation run, and we're going to see how that goes.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking.
How much of this, like, how much of this, I don't want to make a whole hour-long podcast, but how much of this is related to wages? Like, if we know that real wages have been relatively stagnant for, are we talking, 40 years now? That sure, everybody's employed, but if they're not making enough money to buy stuff, then prices aren't going to go up.
For sure. That is totally related. It is absolutely
related. I'm getting it.
Wage stagnation is a big part of this whole conundrum. And Powell and Yellen and everybody will say, and we don't, companies don't have to pay more because we thought we were at full employment at 6%, but oh, look, it went to 4%. We're not at full employment. Oh, look, it's 3.5%. We're not at full employment. There are people coming off the sidelines. I don't know what's going on. I mean, honest to God, Janet Yellen looked at me and she gave me the shruggy. She was like, I don't know. And you're like, oh, there's the dog. Sorry. And if she's not worried about
it,
let me rephrase that. I'm sure she's worried about it, but if she's not stressed about figuring it out, then I'm not going to be either,
There are so many other things to stress about.
That's right.
Too real.
Another voice memo. This one's from Aaron A. Here you go.
Hi, Kai and Molly. Thank you so much for making me smart on so many important things. I thought because of that, you could help me with something. I have Disney Plus newly because I had to watch Hamilton, and I just watched Black Panther and loved it. And it got me thinking, how should I dive into this library of Marvel videos? Is there some sort of watch order like Star Wars or something I should be aware of? What do you recommend? Thanks.
Oh, Mollywood, over to you.
Man, I have tried so hard to stay away from the topic of Chadwick Boseman at all on this podcast because might literally bawl. I mean, that is sincerely, sorry, it's a total tangent, but I'm just like, oh God. What a actual tragedy. And what a the idea of that kind of strength and iron will to just do all of that work.
Dealing with stage 4 colon cancer,
while you were secretly battling for your, that is unbelievable. Yeah. Anyway, I'm sorry. I'm both off topic and now sad. However, I'm really excited for you, Aaron, because you have such a wonderful journey ahead. There are two theories here. I wish I could be you and start over. There are two theories, of course, right? Which is that you can watch it based on the actual chronology of the universe, which means starting with Captain America, the First Avenger. Some parts of it will make more sense if you do that, but you have to start with Captain America, the First Avenger, which might put you off, sometimes when the first few chapters are not great. I know I'm going to get email about this because people love that movie.
Really? I'm going to give you an email right here, right now. What do you mean it might
not
be good?
Favorite.
I love that movie. No. It's the best. Oh, God,
I feel like they spent the entire rest of the MCU trying to, restore some humor and charm to Captain America instead of just having him be, the most uptight Boy Scout that ever Boy Scouted. Now I'm going to get emails from the Boy Scouts, too.
Yeah, you totally are.
But if you watch in order of release, you start with Iron Man. You tell me, Rizdal, really? Really?
Look, I like the
original
Captain America.
You're going to tell me over Iron Man?
I am not a connoisseur. I am not a connoisseur. But don't be talking smack about Captain America. Just don't.
Just the one movie, man. Not the, entire character arc. Which
But then it gets all bearded and whatever, and you're like,
redeeming.
Oh, shut up. You just go back.
He's a moody guy.
Whatever.
He's a moody guy. If it were me and I had the opportunity to go back in time and watch them in order, I think I might. Despite everything I just said about having to start
with
that movie.
Which order?
I'm sorry, the chronology of the MCU.
Okay.
Because it's a little bit, especially if you're just jumping in for the first time and you know you have 26 movies ahead of you, it's more digestible because it makes 26? Sense as an arc. I think all of them, with all the Ant-Man ones and the kind of spin-offs, those 26 movies. So I'm just going to go out a limb here and say, watch them chronologically. And let me know how it goes. And just know it gets better after First Avenger.
And send us your thoughts and comments about Mollywood's take on Captain America, the First Avenger. You know how to do that. Make me smart at marketplace.org. In the meanwhile, we're going to go away. We'll be back tomorrow.
Just wait for the emails to roll in.
They're coming.
We'll be back tomorrow with Hollowed Out Thursday. I'm telling you, thanks to my new Detach with Love and yoga regime, I'm feeling a lot better.
Good.
Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Rose Conlon, who at this very moment is thinking, what have I done?
What?
Tony Wagner is our digital producer. Ben Hethcote is our video producer. And Ethan Peretz, God love him, is going to have to go through those emails. Erica Phillips writes our newsletter and those skills on your smart speaker. And I feel like there's got to be a which way to consume the MCU explainer in our near future.
It's coming to you, pal. Coming to you. Drew Jostad engineered the program today. Ben Talladay and Daniel Ramirez wrote the theme music. Bridget Bodner, senior produces this podcast. The executive director of On Demand around here is Sitar Nieves. And that's where we are.
She still works here. She's right there in the Slack. She said she really liked that question.
Oh, it also took her 4 months to get a freezer. So there you go.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.